Welcome to the Wealth Setting Podcast. It's January 20th, 2015. This is episode 75. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealth Setting Podcast, I try and teach you the principles of wealth building, and I do that with what I call the 10 wealth building principles. You may want to go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. That's where I lay out my philosophy of how a middle-class person can build their wealth, and more importantly, their personal freedom. Because ultimately, that's what this podcast is all about. I like to say that money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. Well, I've taken a few unintended days off from the podcast. I did want to do a show over the weekend to get caught up on a market review. I also wanted to answer questions that I'd received and explain the difference in the importance of both deflation and inflation. But because of my work schedule and the traveling that I've been doing, I've fallen behind and I missed those opportunities. But I did want to get you caught up on what's happening in the markets. And then I also want to discuss something that I think is very important, in particular with all the events that are going on this week. And that topic is an old Wall Street adage, which says, buy the rumor, sell the news. And so we're going to get into that in just a minute. But first, let's look at the markets. Last week when I was recording the show, I did it midday, and I talked about how the markets had recovered and were looking fairly well, particularly at that time of the day. Remember, the key points in the stock market are right at the open, and then midday, that's around 1 or 1:30. East Coast time. That's about the time that the European markets, particularly the FTSE, the British exchange, closes. And so we see a lot of that overseas money either moving in or moving out of the United States. And that's why that's a critical time during the day. And then the ultimate and the most important time is that last 10 minutes or so at the end of the day. And then ultimately what price the market actually closes at 4 o'clock Eastern. That closing price is the all-critical price because that's when traders are locking in their profits or they're deciding to buy more and taking the risk of holding overnight. So that's a critical time. Always keep that in mind when you're looking at stock prices. Stocks can fluctuate wildly through the day, but the only scoreboard that really matters is what happens at that close at 4 o'clock. Well, after I recorded on Friday, the markets did go on to close significantly higher, in fact, shockingly higher. The S&P 500 gained that day in excess of 1.3%. That was an incredible close, particularly as I had mentioned on that day, we were going into a long weekend. We were going into the Martin Luther King Day holiday. And usually when you go into a long weekend, traders and investors tend to be more risk averse because the U.S. markets are closed, but the global markets are open. So the fact that the market rose so much on Friday was really something interesting to consider. Now, I will say that although the volume on Friday was above average, it really wasn't that high of a volume day. And that's because Friday was the third Friday of the month. And as I've told you before, the third Friday of the month is when options expire. Now, some options expiration days are more powerful than others because it's what we would call a triple witching, where you not only have monthly and weekly contracts expiring, but also maybe quarterly or end of year contracts. So you can see an incredible amount of volume on those days. But in any case, the third Friday of every month is almost always a period when you're going to see a lot of volume because even if it's just single options contracts expiring, it's still a lot of volume. It's a lot of traffic. It's like, imagine going to the store, going to the malls during the holidays. You have a lot of people rushing in there to make last-minute purchases. Well, that's sort of an analogy, a way you can look at options expiration, which is the third Friday of the month. So that was the interesting part about this Friday. Although the market was up significantly high and closed up at its high range, the volume wasn't that spectacular when you consider it was options expiration Friday. Now, I don't know what was happening, but perhaps what might have happened was it could have been somewhat of a modified short squeeze. And that's where people that had previously sold short thinking the market was going to go down, they came in and they bought and they had to buy at a higher price to cover their positions. Now, what happens in a short squeeze, although the market's going up, it's just like squeezing a tube of toothpaste. That's why they call it a short squeeze. It shoots up quickly, abruptly. But what happens when you take the pressure off that tube of toothpaste? Well, all the energy, all the momentum is over, and oftentimes the toothpaste will even get sucked back down into the container. And again, that's why we call it a short squeeze. Oftentimes, once you have that abrupt up movement in price, particularly if it's not accompanied by equally strong volume, then you will see those markets settle back down. And I think maybe that's what we're seeing today. As I record this again about midday, we're seeing the markets down, not a great deal. NASDAQ is about flat. The S&P's been up and down all day. Right now, it's down about 20 basis points. The markets did open higher this morning, and then they moved down quite a bit. And now they're just kind of, as I say, stabilizing there. Not a good sign for the bulls, not a good sign to think that we're going to go into a strong uptrend this week. Remember, we've been playing seesaw with a lot of volatility these past few weeks where we'll have a market up or down 1% or more. That lasts for a day or two, maybe even only half of a trading session, and then it abruptly changes direction. That makes swing trading extremely hard because you can't identify a trend, even though you may know that you're in some type of a long-term secular trend. For example, right now we're seeing lower overall energy and oil prices. Well, you can call it a near-term to maybe a long-term trend. We don't know how long it's going to hold out, but it's definitely a secular trend. It's affecting all markets, all economies, all countries. But even with that major secular trend happening, we're not seeing in these past few weeks a definitive trend in the marketplace. It's not necessarily tracking up. It's not necessarily tracking down. It's all over the map. And these are periods of time when I like to stay out of the market. But because although there is money that can be made during periods of high volatility, there's also a great deal of money that can be lost during high periods of volatility. I prefer not to play Russian roulette. I prefer not to take those kind of risks. I like to identify short and near-term trends that I think are going to take place over a couple weeks or maybe a couple months. And then whether the market's moving up or the market's moving down, as long as I've identified the trend, I can know the appropriate positions to take to try and profit from it. But when the market goes up one day and then down the next two and then up again, there is no discernible trend. And that's why I like to stay on the sidelines during those periods of volatility. And that's what we're in right now. We're continuing to see softness in the global economies despite the low cost in oil and energy costs. China is continuing its slowdown, although they maybe are stabilizing right around 7%. It's still well off the projections that people have been expecting from them. They're well off their double-digit growth. That has major repercussions to global economies, and that's one of the reasons you see such low commodity and energy prices. The other thing that's going on, as we noted last week, was the Swiss Central Bank or the Swiss National Bank. They depegged their currency to the euro, which they had done for the previous 3 years, in order to depress their currency so that their exporting and their multinational companies would be better able to compete in the European markets. Well, they decided that wasn't a good move, or perhaps they decided that it was getting too expensive to devaluate the currency. Or again, perhaps they just know something's coming up with the European Central Bank's decision this week, which will be this week, and how they're going to devaluate their currency, and they just didn't want to play ball anymore. I mention all these things of perhaps what it is, because we really don't know. There's a lot of people that speculate. You can turn on any financial show and hear all kinds of supposed experts pontificating about why it happened. But you know what? Only the people that control that money in the Swiss National or Central Bank, they're the only ones that truly know. And even when they tell us what their actions are, we don't know that they're not lying to us or obfuscating for some other reason. Something to remember is in the marketplace, it's often less important to know why something happened than to just be able to figure out how to profit from the fact that it did happen. Now, as I just mentioned, the European Central Bank, they're going to be announcing their quantitative easing program this week on Thursday. That's the 22nd of January. And that's where I'm going to shift the direction of this podcast and take it away from looking at a market review and talking about that Wall Street adage that I mentioned, which is buy the rumor, sell the news. And that's very appropriate this week for all the things that are going on. The fact that the Swiss government decoupled their currency to the euro, the fact that on the 22nd of January, the European Central Bank will be announcing their quantitative easing program, the fact that we're right now in the middle, in the heart of fourth quarter earnings announcements, and we're hearing about not only how these companies performed during the fourth quarter of 2014, but we're hearing their expectations and projections for the first quarter of 2015, and then in fact for the whole first half of the year of 2015. We're also going to see a very key election take place in Greece, which could have some impact on whether they stay or leave the European Union and whether or not they try to get their budgets under control and repay their bad debt. So there's a lot going on around the world this week, and it's no wonder that for the last couple weeks, the markets have been very volatile and very up and down as each day we get a different piece of conflicting news that either encourages or worries traders. Now let's talk about this old Wall Street adage. Buy the rumor, sell the news. Something you have to remember with these old adages, they're like old wives' tales, or they're like cliches. They're not always right, they're often overused, but the fact that they're used at all, and the fact that they've been used for many years or many generations, does indicate that there has to be at least some level of truth, or they wouldn't have turned into cliches, or they wouldn't have lasted through the ages. So it's one of those kind of things where you don't want to bet all your money on a cliche, something like, you know, sell in May and go away. That's a phrase that comes up every year right after the spring as we go into the summer. And it doesn't mean you should necessarily take that literally. But again, there is some level of truth to that. or it wouldn't have persisted all these years. And that's the same that can be said with one of my favorite adages, which is, buy the rumor, sell the news. So let me explain what that means. And I'll do this by point of illustration with a trade that I made and that I talked to you about in previous episodes. If you'll go back a little more than a month, maybe about 5 weeks ago, as I was beginning to close out my positions in that uptrend that started on October 21st, I told you I was looking at taking some money out of the United States, which had been so hot, and looking at putting it into some other countries. And then in particular, the one that I mentioned was Germany. I was bullish on Germany. I was looking at investing in Germany through an exchange-traded fund. And I was doing that because I felt that the German economy had not recovered as much as the United States economy in general and the stock market in particular. So while the United States valuations on our stock market were very high, they were still pretty reasonable in Europe, particularly in Germany. So I thought Germany had some room to move if the overall world economy picked up. I thought Germany would be well favored by these lower energy costs, particularly lower oil and gas and diesel prices, because Germany really doesn't have much or any domestic investment or production in those type of energy sources. With the stronger dollar, I also thought that was a trend that was going to help Germany because that would make German exports into the United States more competitive, again, helping drive their sales. So I thought there were a lot of short-term and near-term trends that were going to help the German stock market, and I wanted to try and take advantage of those. I did take a small position to kind of put my toe in the water. But it didn't take too long for the markets to turn. I think it was really that same week, maybe only held that position 2 or 3 days before I sold it. And that's because this was the middle of December. The U.S. and all world markets were going through a really mild little correction there before they closed out their Santa Claus rally. I had made nice money over the course of the year. I just wanted to lock in my profits and not take any more risk. And so I sold virtually all of my positions, including that German position that I had just, you know, a few days before opened up. The other thing that I thought would be favorable, and this is something I didn't mention, but it goes to this adage of buy the rumor, sell the news. I knew that the rumor was that coming up in this third week of January, the European Central Bank would supposedly finally kick in their quantitative easing program. Now, I call this a rumor because it's been talked about for a long time. In fact, it goes back to about 2.5 years. It goes all the way back to about mid-2012 when the United States started their third round of quantitative easing. Now, the reason that's so important is because in this Keynesian type economy we live in, everybody is convinced that through government spending and government manipulation, it will help the economy and it will help the stock market. And while that's true in the short term, I'm not a believer in it. I don't think it helps over the long term. In any case, a little sidebar here. It's kind of funny that the people that are Keynesians and they're really pushing the Europeans to mimic the quantitative easing programs that we've done here in the United States over the last 6 years or so, they ignore the fact that to more or less degree, Japan has been trying these same practices for over 25 years, and we can see they've had very poor results. Even just their short-term efforts these last 2 years, what we've now called Abenomics because of their Prime Minister Abe, the raising of taxes, the devaluation of the Japanese yen, it's not spurring their economy. It has helped their stock market, but the underlying economy still has the same weak spots that it has for the last 20 years. In any case, let's get back to this old adage of buy the rumor, sell the news. So the rumor has been that the European Central Bank is finally going to start a quantitative easing program. In the last 7 or 8 months, the rumor has been getting stronger and stronger. And I say rumor because they keep saying they're going to do it. It's the official policy, supposedly, of the European Central Bank. And then everybody, all these experts that are supposedly in the know, they keep talking about it. But it is a rumor until it actually happened. And so that was also on my mind when I bought into what appeared was going to be a German uptrend about 5 weeks ago. Now, that rumor is actually tied to some of the other trends that were actually going on. For example, one of the reasons that the European currency has been so weak in the last year has been the fact that people are anticipating the European Central Bank to devaluate their currency through some type of quantitative easing. Now, their currency is also weak because they're going through a recession. They have very low interest rates. So that isn't the only reason, and that's why I didn't say it was the only reason or I didn't say it was the primary reason. I just said it was one of the reasons. So the rumor, that very rumor, was driving the euro lower. And in fact, many people thought that the European Central Bank was actually just talking down their currency, getting all the advantages of having a lower currency, which would be things like the lower interest rates. They were having those advantages without actually having to do anything to make it happen. They were just talking it down. They were just creating the rumor. So as I saw the DAX, that's the German stock exchange, their main index, as I saw that making what I call a hook and barb pattern, I saw it making that pattern and I tried to get in at the right entry point because I had all those short-term trends that I was looking at, as well as the fact of buying into the rumor that a month or so away, they were going to be lowering interest rates and buying into the rumor that, you know, within about a little more than a month, the European Central Bank would be doing their quantitative easing program. Whenever there's a rumor like that, there's always excitement and the market is always anticipating. Remember, the market is looking forward. It's looking forward usually up to 6 months away. Oftentimes, as you get closer and closer to the real release date of the news, for example, like an earnings announcement, like then that's what we're in right now. We're in earnings announcements over the next couple weeks. You get a buildup of excitement and interest because remember, the stock market isn't about fundamental economic policies. It's not about bookkeeping. If that was the case, then every CPA you know would be multi-billionaires from trading in the stock market. The market is much more about human nature and human emotions than it is about sound economic policy. And so as you get to the point where those rumors get talked about more and as the anticipation date comes out, I mean, think of like a big blockbuster movie that you've been waiting to see. There's all kinds of hype and announcements and movie trailers they put out. There's all kinds of marketing efforts. All your friends are talking about it. People can't wait to go out and see the premiere. And if you go out and you see it and it's a fantastic movie, well, then it goes on to, you know, Academy Awards and people go and see it multiple times. They download it on Netflix or they buy the DVD collection, and it's a great success. On the other hand, a lot of times, a lot of things like movies or new technology, you know, new iPhones, they come out with a lot of hype. But when you actually go out and buy them, you get buyer's remorse. You're not excited with the product. You don't think it was a good movie, particularly if it's something like a sequel. And then what happens? Well, you tell all your friends, hey, that movie wasn't really worth seeing after all. The movie's a flop. No one downloads it on Netflix. No one wants to buy the DVDs. And so it ends up just being a featured movie on broadcast TV. Well, in my estimation, I would say more times than not in the stock market, we get a lot of hype on the rumor and then we get a lot of flop on the news. So that's where that adage comes in. Buy the rumor, sell the news. So had I held on to my German position, had it not looked like it was falling apart back in mid-December, then I would have ridden it up for these last 5 weeks, and then sometime this week, sometime before Thursday the 22nd, I would have most likely sold that position because I was going to sell ahead of that announcement. Because I personally don't think the European Central Bank is going to do anything so spectacular that it's going to drive the markets any higher than they already are. Because there are some real systemic problems going on, particularly in Southern Europe. They're just lowering interest rates or buying some bonds or trying to devaluate the currency. I don't see how that's easily going to pull them out of the problem. And so that's an example where I would buy the rumor and then sell the news. And then again, you see that all the time, particularly right now when we're in earnings season. We see all this hype coming out saying, oh, this biotech company, they're making so much money, they're going to have so much fantastic earnings. So ahead of the earnings actually being announced, the stock price gets driven up. And then by the time they actually announce the good earnings, even if they're spectacular earnings, it's already been built in and factored into the price of the stock. There's no more hype to drive any more investors into buying the stock because everybody that was excited about it already bought, and so consequently, the stock becomes what we would call exhausted, and you'll see the price of the stock fall rather than rise, even though it was good news. That's what I mentioned a couple sessions ago about these lower oil prices and the fact that once we get through the bumps in the road and once the repercussions filter through the economy in these companies that were very successful, you know, the ExxonMobils, the Halliburtons, these companies that are drilling in the Bakken or in the other shale regions that have been so profitable and so successful over the last 3 or 4 years, well, they're obviously going to suffer from lower energy prices. And so we have to get through that ripple in the market. But once the benefit of lower energy costs filters through, it's going to help, obviously, consumer products, airlines, trucking companies. I mean, any company or person or country that's a major consumer of energy is going to benefit. But the time to take advantage of that is not now that it's happening. It was back 6 months and 5 months and 4 months and 3 months ago when it was still a rumor when we weren't sure that energy prices were going to collapse all the way. Remember, you just go back to June and West Texas Intermediate was selling for right around $100 a barrel. As it would creep down, as it would hit 90, the rumors would say that it was going to go lower, but no one knew for sure. And then it would go to 80, and then no one knew if it would go lower, but there would be rumors that there would. And so each time the oil prices fell, the expectation in these other stocks where they would make money would rise. But by the time now that oil has already fallen and has been staying below $50 a barrel, where it's come down in some cases as much as 60% in the last 7 months, well, those savings are already built into stock prices. So consequently, things like airline stocks, many of them are already up over 30%. That, again, was an example of buying the rumor. Now that the news is that oil was below $50 a barrel, now it's not time to buy airline stocks. That time was 3 or 4 or 5 months ago. Now perhaps it's time to sell the news and look for opportunities somewhere else. Now again, remember, although I'm a licensed investment advisor, in this podcast, I no way offer any type of advice or recommendation. I'm just trying to teach you about some basic trading principles. And really, overall, I'm really trying to teach you wealth building principles. But in today's episode, this is obviously more about trading. So I'm just doing this for an educational purpose. I'm not telling you to buy or sell transportation stocks. I'm not telling you it's time or it's not time to be buying oil stocks or anything else. No speculation at all. I'm just trying to explain to you the way the market works and the way traders think. Use this as an educational forum, not as a sign to buy or sell any equity. Well, because of everything that's going on, all this news is breaking, over the next week or so, I anticipate the markets to continue to be volatile. I personally don't see any definitive trend direction, either up or down in the near or short term, one way or the other. And so that's why I'm personally staying out of the markets right now. And what I plan to do over the next couple episodes is, rather than talk about specific volatility in the market or specific stocks, I want to talk to you about economics in general, and specifically why economics are so important in your life, why it's so important that you understand the economic scientific thought process, and then also to explain to you some of the common schools of thought that form our modern concepts of economics. And in these upcoming episodes, I'm not going to be talking about the nuts and bolts of economics. This isn't going to be an Econ 101 where we talk about micro and macro and supply and demand. It's not going to be that element of economics. It's just going to be about how applying the thought process of some of these economic principles can be beneficial in your life, why you should be interested in it, why you should want to increase your knowledge of it. And then in specifically, I'll be talking about the 2 or 3 popular schools of thought that influence us. For example, Keynesian economics, the Chicago School of Economics, and Austrian economics. So that's what I'll be talking about in the next upcoming episodes. I will try and do those over the course of the next 2 days. I do have a lot going on right now with my business and my travel schedule, so it might be difficult to fit them in, and I do ask you to please forgive me when I miss a day or two. I do my best to provide you with information that I think is valuable and timely, and in many cases evergreen, and I mean that although it's timely, it's also based on sound, solid principles and fundamentals that don't change. And so again, when I miss a day or two here and there, please forgive me. You have to remember that whether I do an episode or not, this podcast is invaluable and it's worth every penny that you pay for it. Right? I say that obviously tongue-in-cheek because it's free, you're not paying anything for it, so therefore it is invaluable. Well, judging by the response I get from the audience, I know that you do find value in it. I personally get a great deal of value out of preparing for these podcasts, and from a selfish standpoint, that's why I do them. Well, that'll wrap it up for today. As always, you can reach me at the website wealthsteading.com. I appreciate hearing your comments, your questions, your concerns. Although I can't reply back to everyone because of the volume of the emails I receive, I do promise you I read each one, and I do take your thoughts and questions into consideration as I prepare new episodes. So until next time, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.